Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, from obesity and addiction to ultra marathons.
Nothing from my current life would resemble anything that was going on in my life 15 years ago. In fact, I was back then 320 pounds. I was suffering, battling with food addiction, drug addiction, alcohol addiction. Financially, I was wrecked. I had just lost a company, an $8 million business, and I was at the proverbial and literal rock bottom.
Training for a first marathon after recovering from cancer.
I managed to get through the entire run and found I still had gas in the tank and thought, boy, if I can do a half, do I try and do a half marathon again a little bit faster, or do I push it and go to a full marathon? And I thought, that sounds like a challenge that I can enjoy, so I maybe stupidly signed up for race weekend.
And another run at North America's oldest race.
The fact that it's older than Boston, I think, really makes it demand a lot of respect, and it definitely has that charm. They've kept the course so similar throughout the years, and I think the challenging course and the challenging conditions that it always presents is what actually makes people sign up year after year. It's like they're drawn to testing themselves.
On this edition of iRun Radio, the remarkable story of David Clark, who has overcome obesity and drug and alcohol addictions to become a prolific ultramarathoner and author. We'll talk to a runner who is preparing for his first marathon after undergoing cancer treatment. And the oldest road race in North America is on this weekend, the Around the Bay 30K race in Hamilton. We will talk to elite runner Dana Pitereski, who has won it three times and has some tips for every runner. Let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
How's your week been?
Oh, feeling great. Thank you.
The weather's getting a little bit better. We're starting to see some signs of spring here in Ottawa, although it's been a cold March, so I'll be glad to see the end of it when April arrives tomorrow.
There's always that turning point, right, where you gingerly take that first run in your shorts. Have you been running in your shorts yet?
Once or twice, but I haven't been running outside that much, right? So I guess my answer should be yes, I've been running in my shorts on my treadmill.
Exactly what I'm talking about. But yeah, but it's funny because when the seasons do change, I find that, like, you know, I'm very overly dressed for parts. And it's also corresponding. When I feel fast, I'm in shorts and a tank top. And when I feel slow, I'm all buttoned up and I've got two coats and my hat on and everything. So it's not necessarily the weather. It's just how I'm feeling, how strong.
Yeah. And what I love about this time of year is that if it's 7 degrees, then everybody behaves like it's 20. And in October, if it's 7 degrees, everybody behaves like it's minus 10, right?
That's the fun of the whole thing,
yeah.
You know? I mean, nobody is as in tune to the seasons as we are running outside. I never suffer from seasonal affection disorder.
You know?
I'm always out there getting whatever rays of sun there are.
Yeah. But if it's like 10 degrees in March, everybody wants to barbecue and open up the patio. If it's 10 degrees in October, people are getting out the parkas and they're complaining about how freezing cold it is. And so it's all a matter of perspective.
What does it all mean? What's the meaning of this?
Yeah, now you're on the road. You're doing a bit of traveling. And I know whenever I go somewhere, I always love to get in that first run when I arrive because you get to explore. You get to see this new place. You're running in unfamiliar territory. Time always passes more quickly when it's kind of a new course to run on, right?
Yeah, I learned this when I went to the Vancouver Marathon. So I'm based in Toronto, and I went to the Vancouver. Matter of fact, it wasn't the Vancouver Marathon. It was the Lululemon Seaweeds event, which is their wildly popular half marathon that they put on every August. Oh, I think it's in September now. And it was funny because coming from Toronto to Vancouver, I was like, I wouldn't exactly say jet lag, but I just wasn't at my best. So I couldn't tell. You know, I kept drinking coffee and trying to take a nap and whatever it is just to get myself snapped to it. And then the only thing that worked, go figure, is my run. So I took a run and I was like, this is what I was looking for. And now I feel like myself again.
Yeah. And you get to see a new place. And even if you've somewhere you've been before, you're running from a different hotel, you're running through a different part of town, and you get to see a new place. I really like that. I'm going to be doing a bit of traveling too, and I'm looking forward to exploring on foot another city. And it's the kind of place, especially if you're going somewhere for work. You know, you go somewhere for a conference and you're going to spend most of the time indoors, right? You're going to go back and forth between the hotel and the conference center and maybe one or two restaurants. And then you go out for a 10K run and you go to a completely different part of the city and you never would have had that. And you see the sunrise or you see the light reflecting off some of the buildings in the downtown of this city. And it's something you would have never experienced if you weren't a runner.
Yeah, and you know, and you're a big entrepreneur, famous through the world for that. And one of the things I always find is that when I do my runs, sometimes when you go to one of these things where it's all about hobnobbing and schmoozing or whatever, you know, the time you meet somebody is when you're in the lobby, put your sneakers on. Oh, you're a runner too, and boom, there you go. So everybody you were trying to meet at the Tony restaurant, you end up finding when you're in your fluorescent shoes.
Yeah, very true. Coming up on the show today, we have a very compelling story, a runner named David Clark, who has written a book and who 15 years ago was over 300 pounds and had some addiction issues, had just lost his business, and turned everything around, he says, through running. He replaced an unhealthy addiction with a healthy one, and now he does ultra marathons.
Wow.
And he's run across the United States and
wow.
He does all these amazing things. And it this is a really extreme example, but I've talked to other people over the years who have done something similar where they take something that they're sort of compelled to do and it's an unhealthy habit. They get rid of that and they replace it with a healthy compulsion.
It's the best. I mean, these stories, you know, and each story is original. Each story has some themes that repeat, you know, because you hear, I've heard traces of that before in other people's tales, but it's interesting how every single person has their own variant on the theme.
Yeah, very true. All right, Ben, safe travels. We'll talk to you again next week.
I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
That's Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, author and ultramarathoner David Clark. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. 15 years ago, David Clark was obese and suffering from addiction issues. Now he's an ultra marathon runner, and he's the author of several books, including his latest, Broken Open: Mountains, Demons, Treadmills, and a Search for Nirvana. David Clark, welcome to iRun Radio.
It's my pleasure to be here.
So let's go back 15 years. Tell us a little bit about what your life was like then and the path you were on, and then we can talk a little bit about how you changed the course of your life.
Sure, we'll jump right into the pain, huh?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah, if you don't mind.
You know, not at all, man, not at all. My life is literally an open book. 15 years ago, obviously, nothing from my current life would resemble anything that was going on in my life 15 years ago. In fact, I was, back then, 320 pounds. I was suffering, battling with food addiction, drug addiction, alcohol addiction. Financially, I was wrecked. I had just lost a company, an $8 million business, and I was at the proverbial and literal rock bottom. And, you know, I'd kind of set in play a chain of events that had been playing out for years and years and years, and I woke up one morning and realized I was either going to die or I was going to figure out something else.
So what did you go through at that point? Tell me about the process. What did you think about? What did you learn? How did you take the next step?
Yeah, man, it's a big, big question. And, you know, so when I hit that rock bottom, you know, I kind of had to address that. Like, what was going on? What was going on that having a big company and having money and houses and cars, you know, wasn't solving? You know, why was I looking for happiness in a bottle? In at a fast food restaurant. And
you know, that process, you know, needs to be interrupted. You know, it's really hard to get out when everything seems that bad. So I couldn't think of anything kind of more dramatic, crazy, stupid, whatever label you want to put on it, than going for a run. You know, and
right.
So that's what I did. Even at 320 pounds, I went out the door and I ran, and I wasn't much of a runner, but I knew that I needed to do something to interrupt the process so I could start the longer process of sorting through all that wreckage.
So you went for a run. That's how it started.
It really is, man. I mean, you know, there's a lot kind of going on at the same time there. You know, the biggest thing that I kind of came to this point where I realized, you know, it should have been obvious, but it wasn't, you know, that I was not a 320-pound alcoholic by accident. You know, it was, you know, it would be easy to call the drugs, the food, the stuff like that, the problem, but those were symptoms. Those are symptoms of a greater problem. And so I know I needed a total change, not just my exercise habits and my nutritional habits, but my outlook, everything. So when I started taking those first steps of running, I was literally, you know, walking away from all of the things that I thought, you know, were what reality was. I was willing to leave all that behind and in favor of everything new, you know?
So tell me how you went from there to running ultra marathons. What was the path forward from there?
You know, we're all suffering from some sort of an identity crisis, you know, like we have a picture of who we are, and it's not matching up to what we want or to how we think the world perceives us. So, you know, when you change your behaviors, it's never going to be a long-term change because that identity is still always in conflict. So much of this process to get to a finish line of a 100-mile ultra was reconstructing, you know. The beautiful thing about rock bottom is it was easy for me to let go of the old picture of me. So I just went about this process of saying, you know, hey, if I got it all wrong, you know, maybe I was born to be some sort of a runner.
So,
and as crazy as that sounds, it worked.
Yeah, and did you effectively, I've talked to other people who have been through a similar journey to yours. I wouldn't compare it, it's probably not on the same scale as the transformation you've had, but did you effectively trade one addiction for another, an unhealthy addiction for a healthy addiction, basically?
I love that question, man, and it's the question that I get the most. I get two questions because I'm also a plant-based athlete. So I get the questions of, where do you get your protein, and did you switch addictions from running to, or from alcohol to running? And, you know, at first, it's probably reasonable to say yes, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, the new book that I just released, Broken Open, is about this journey from not just finishing one ultramarathon, but going on to do 100 ultramarathons and running across the country and 48 hours on the treadmill and all of this stuff that on the surface, you know, really looks extreme. And it's really easy to kind of lay that over the template of addiction. But I believe that as long as we're taking the spiritual journey along with us, that it's there. You know what I mean? If I'm still running to escape my addictions, I really didn't get anywhere. But if I was running to kind of find the depth of who I am, to test my character, to put myself in tough situations and be awake to what's happening in those, then it doesn't have to be an addiction. But it's tough because you do have to walk that line. It's dangerous territory out there, you know?
Yeah, but it sounds to me like you've used running, and obviously it's just one element of how you've changed your life, but it feels like it's kind of the front end of a transformation that you've undergone, and that it's the focal point for why you're eating better and why you're staying sober and why you're living a healthier life. Is that the case?
You know, it is. And I think we need some sort of mechanism to change, right? You know, especially when you need a dramatic change, you know, it's tough. You know, I tried the small incremental change, the promises, the diet plans, the joining gyms, all that, and none of it worked. You know, I'd always end up in the same place. So for me, I needed something where the emotional stakes were high, you know, and I go into real depth in that when I write, because, you know, it's tough to believe. You know, I quit on myself 10,000 times, you know, so running gives you this kind of unique affirmation where all you have to do is go out and do the work every day, and it gives you affirmation that you're doing the right things. But what happens if running goes away, right? What happens? We do need that mechanism to get leverage and pull us out, but eventually we have to put those training wheels away, right, and learn how to ride without them. And that's the way my focal point has been in the last 4 or 5 years of my life, is to become, you know, more grounded in my spiritual practice and meditation and just becoming the best human being I can be. You know, I became a great runner. That was a surprise. But I want to be a great human, too. I want to be a good friend, a good father, a good, you know, neighbor.
So tell me about some of the running experiences. Let's talk, for example, about your first ultra marathon. What did it feel like for you to accomplish something like that after everything you'd been through?
You know, it was obviously emotional, and it still is, man. I still cry at finish lines.
Me too.
But, you know, yeah, it's an amazing thing, and what I love about the ultra marathon, you know, my first marathon was really emotional too, and it was great, and I would never say anything to diminish that accomplishment for myself or for anyone else. But there's something about ultra, just the time that it takes, you know, the time that you're out there, you're going to experience, you know, emotions like you never will before, stripped down, raw, and you have to deal with it. You have two choices. Right? People always say quitting's not an option. Well, quitting is a very attractive option when you're
sure
in the middle
is.
Of a 100-mile race.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to really find a way to live in that space and know that, hey, I'm choosing this. You know, and for me, I had to be really present in that and say, if I just stay here in the moment, the pain's not that bad. If I let that pain dominate my mind, if I let, you know, my whole experience become that pain, I'm going to quit. So that's a very radical kind of thing to go through, especially when you spent the majority of your life, you know, not being very determined and not being very physical. So it was very transformative, and you know, I really spent a lot of time and effort in the book trying to recreate that in as much detail as I could.
So what has running come to mean for you then, and mean to you?
Yeah, I look at running as just, I don't even see it as running anymore at all. It's more of a tool for self-discovery. You know, I'm trying to learn things that I don't know about myself. And it's interesting because I walked away from doing the extreme kind of running. Right after I finished the Broken Open book, I just kind of stepped away and wanted to, you know, I'm not going to stop being an athlete. I'm not going to stop, you know, experiencing health and fitness. But I wanted to just, you know, kind of give myself the ultimate test. You know, is it real? You know, can you walk away from running, not as a punishment, but can you just kind of ease back and still be just as happy, just as fulfilled, you know, feel just as good? And so that's what I've done the last couple of years. You know, I still run a little bit, you know, 5Ks, 10Ks. You know, and I train, I'm like an amateur boxer too, but, I'm still on that path of self-discovery. I'm still wanting to learn about who I am and who that guy is underneath all the labels. But, you know, I'm not just doing it in running.
Was there a moment for you along the way where it just clicked and you felt like, I've turned the corner, I'm a runner now, I'm not an alcoholic? I know in some respects you're always going to be an alcoholic, but was there a moment where you said, I've put all that behind me and now I'm a runner, I'm an ultra marathoner?
Yeah, that moment really was the finish line of the Leadville 100. You know, I'd kind of put my toe in that water a little bit, and honestly, the first time I ever really allowed that to kind of sink in and call myself a runner, to use those words, was the very first time I went to a running store and bought a real pair of running shoes, and the guy at the running store was so awesome, so supportive, and I was like, oh, I'm not a real runner, you know, I'm just you know, just doing this whatever. And he's like, look, man, You put on your running shoes and you go out and you run, and for no reason, that makes you a runner. And that actually meant something to me. So in a very real way, That was the first time I really thought about it. But doing something that led the 100 seems so impossible, so big, so scary, that I knew if I was ever able to accomplish it, I would never be able to dismiss it the way that I did some of my other races. You know?
It's such an incredibly powerful story. I'm so impressed with what you've done and the message that you have to share. Thank you for sharing it with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's 100% my honor to be on. Thank you for having me.
David Clark is the author of Broken Open, Mountains, Demons, Treadmills, and a Search for Nirvana. Coming up next, a first marathon after a recovery from cancer. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Andrew Boyle is my colleague at 1310 News in Ottawa. He recovered from cancer in his throat and neck last year and started running in the fall. He told us the story of his first half marathon, the Canada Army Run, and now he's training for his first marathon at Ottawa Race Weekend. Andrew, it's great to welcome you back to iRun Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be back. Thank you.
So let's talk about how the running has been going lately. You've been building up towards the marathon, but I know you've encountered some challenges, and this has not been a great winter to run in Ottawa. So I know as you've started preparing for your first marathon, there have been some obstacles.
Well, I didn't realize, because running is fairly new to me, just over the past couple of years or so, that it's those nagging little injuries. Mm. And they're not even injuries. They're just annoyances. You know, first it was my ankle, and I thought, okay, I'll wait for a week and that'll get better, and it did. And then I started running again, and then it was my knee, and then hip, and then back, and then I dislocated my big toe, which was just the most stupid thing.
How did you do that?
Just bending over and thought, oh, I'll be smart, keep my back straight, and go up on my toes, and lost my balance, move forward, and it popped out. So that set me back a couple of weeks, and it's still sore when I run, but you see runners every day out somewhere in the city and you think, that looks fairly easy, but it's those little things. And as soon as they start building up, I mean, that can really delay your progress.
Sure. So let's go back over your story and why you took up running and how you've come to embrace it a little bit. You survived cancer last year.
Yeah.
And after that was over, you'd done a bit of running before that, right? But not very much.
A little bit, only because I thought I was in pretty good shape and cycle all the time, and I have for a few decades. But realized when I just decided, I'm just going to go for a run just to see if maybe I enjoy it more than I used to in the past, which I didn't at some point. But anyway, so I thought, I'll try and go for a run. And I made it literally a couple of hundred meters and just couldn't even get my breath. It was ridiculous how out of shape I was. So I thought, I better start doing a little more than just cycling. So I began running, but just really around the block. It wasn't any sort of length or any goal I had in mind. It was just basically to get in shape. And then the cancer hit, and when your body goes down to almost nothing from 4 months of inactivity, I realized that I had to step up the game. So that was about this time last year.
So you did the half marathon at the Army Run, and what was that experience like, and what did it end up meaning for you?
It was very interesting because you entering a run like that, you're thinking to yourself, okay, first I have to pace myself. Second of all, I don't know if I'm going to make it all the way running. I might have to walk a bit. So I resign myself to that fact. And if I have to walk a bit, nobody cares. It doesn't matter to anybody but me, I guess, a personal accomplishment. But I managed to get through the entire run and found I still had gas in the tank and thought, boy, if I can do a half, do I try and do a half marathon again a little bit faster, or do I push it and go to a full marathon? And I thought, that sounds like a challenge that I can enjoy. So I maybe stupidly signed up for Race Weekend, which is in late May, instead of having till September or later to train. I've only got really a couple of months now.
Yeah. But what was that? Was that a threshold for you, a milepost, the fact that you came back from the cancer treatment and you were able to run the half marathon?
I honestly didn't think I was going to be able to get through. Now, in leading up to the half marathon, I did run a 20K. I thought I better see if I can at least go almost to the end of a half marathon. So I just mapped out a 20K route in my neighborhood. And again, found it a little bit challenging, but I managed to make it without stopping and walking a bit or anything. So I thought, well, okay, that's not bad, and I can do it. But when I look at the people who do this competitively, I can't believe the time that they do it in. When I look at how my time, my progress on even, say, a 5 or a 10K run, and then I look at people in my age group even who are the best at it and how fast they are, yeah. I think, how do they do that without just totally collapsing? I mean, it's amazing to me that the human body can run for that amount of time over that distance and not break down.
But what did it mean for you personally? You're talking about all the running side of this. You had been through cancer, and then after your treatment, you ran a half marathon. Was that? Did you feel like, okay, I've got control of my body again? I'm somewhat healthy again because I've run this race.
You know, I hate to say it didn't play that much of a factor in. I just knew I had to do something because you're uninspired for, in my case, it was 4 months treatment, and thankfully it got rid of the cancer I had in my throat and my neck. But it wasn't, it was more a case that I looked at myself and went, ugh, because everything sagged. There was no muscle mass anywhere on my body left because my body just, because you're not eating properly, obviously, with my kind of cancer, yeah. Your body is feeding off its own fat and muscle. So I ended up losing almost every ounce of muscle that I had. So I thought I had to do something. And this was a way to challenge myself with something. And I knew I could cycle if I entered a 50K or 100K ride. I knew I could do that already. I didn't know what I could do as far as running went. So I thought, why don't I challenge myself and set a goal? Because once I achieve a goal I found in years past when I said, I'm going to run 10K. As soon as I ran 10K, I didn't want to run again because I met my goal.
You needed another goal.
So I needed another one. So I thought, okay, let's try the half marathon, which seemed absolutely ridiculous at the time. But it was a sense of accomplishment. I got my time engraved and attached that to my little runner's medal that they give you at the end of the run. And I'm still very proud of what I did, but I knew it was something that I had to do.
And do you feel that way about the marathon? Is something you have to do?
Well, this is something that I thought, and to be honest with you, I mean, you inspired me a bit. I've known marathon runners in my life. I mean, it used to be a lot more unique than it is today. I'm shocked at the number of people who've run marathons or tried to run marathons in the past. But someone like you who goes out, took it up fairly late. You weren't a teenage marathon runner. So, and I thought, well, if Mark can do it, you know, I mean, you train for it. If you're, and I'm a relatively slim person by genetics, so I thought that's something that's a bit of a challenge, and it sounds kind of impressive on your personal goals. You know,
sure.
You're not going to run around going, "Hey, I just ran a marathon." But at the same time, inside, I think it gives you that personal feeling of accomplishment that, despite your age, and I will be 60 when the marathon's run, that you can do something. You can just jump up off the couch after a couple of years of not doing really too much and accomplish a goal like this.
Yeah, and there are lots of runners who take up running when they're in their 30s and their 40s, but you took it up in the second half of your 50s, right?
Yeah.
And now here you are about to do your first marathon at 60 years of age. I think that's really impressive.
Okay, you just put a wall up in front of me. Now I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. But
yeah,
it's,
but I mean, that's, you know, you're, that's, and I know you're a fit guy, and you, as you said, you rode, you cycled quite a bit.
Yeah.
You ride your bike to work and back in the in the summer months when the weather's a little bit nicer in Ottawa. But to run your first marathon at age 60, I think is very inspiring.
I think I bit off a little bit more than I could chew, because the one thing that I sort of set myself up to do was to qualify for the Boston Marathon, even though I have no desire to go into the Boston Marathon. But I thought, let's look up the time for a 60-year-old man and see what that would be to qualify, because this is a qualifying race for Boston. So I was shocked to find out it's 3 hours and 50 minutes. And in my training, there is no way I'm going to get even close to that time. But it's still a goal in the back of my mind. I think if I could finish somewhere shortly after 4 hours, I've sort of set the new goal now of double the time of the winner. So if the winner is 210, I'll go 420. Okay. I figure if someone a third of my age can do it, and I can do it in double the time, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. That's about what I was aiming for in my first marathon.
Was it?
Something
okay.
like twice the time, underneath, you know, below twice the time of the of the winner, and I ended up doing 4 hours and 8 minutes, something in that range. So, yeah.
Yeah, that is excellent. I mean, if I could get around that time, I mean, I think that would be a pretty good accomplishment.
And health-wise, you've been okay lately?
Yeah, absolutely. I go back every couple of months to the cancer clinic at the Ottawa General, and they do a quick little, how's your father? And I'm all good. So they say, okay, see you in a couple of months. So it's been the care and the treatment and the follow-up and all the stuff you go through is just amazing there. And I'm thrilled to have bounced back the way I have. I know not everyone does. And it's if anyone does happen to be listening to this who has just received a diagnosis or whatever, there is hope. It's not all doom and gloom all the time.
And how do you feel about the marathon being a couple of months away now and you're training, you're ramping up, and despite the obstacles we talked about earlier, you're starting to accumulate more mileage? Is it starting to feel pretty good?
No.
No?
No, I feel I'm very far behind because of my big toe in particular. And so I don't have the stamina yet. So I don't know if another month and a half, let's say, of full training, I don't know if that's enough to get me to marathon shape. But I'm certainly going to be at the start line, and I'm going to go for as long and as far as and as fast as I can and just see if I can reach that personal goal.
And what has running come to mean for you through all of this?
Well, it means a healthier lifestyle, for one. It also means getting out and off the couch. And in my line of work, I'm off at 11 o'clock every morning. So what do you do for the rest of the day when all your friends are working? You know, you've got to find something to do other than sit on the couch and just kind of vegetate. So running has given me a purpose every afternoon to go out and do something in snow, rain, wet, cold, whatever it is. It's something I wouldn't normally have done, but now I know that if I don't get out and train now, I'm going to pay for it on the second last weekend of May.
Well, good luck to you as your training continues. I look forward to hearing more about it and to cheering you on race day. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
That's Andrew Boyle, my colleague at 1310 News here in Ottawa. Coming up next, getting ready for the oldest road race in North America. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. The first edition of the Around the Bay 30K road race in Hamilton was 125 years ago in 1894, 3 years before the first Boston Marathon. Dana Pitereski has won the race 3 of the last 4 years, and she's put together 30 tips for runners that you can read at irun.ca. Dana, thanks for joining us on iRun Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So what is it about Around the Bay for you? You've won 3 of the last 4 editions of this event. What's so special about Around the Bay?
Well, actually, for me, it's a great chance to go home and stay with my family for a bit. Living in Vancouver, it's sort of nice to have an excuse to come out east and race there, and they're usually there to watch the race as well. And it's also a great chance to have like a marathon prep race for me this year. In the past, I have used it, you know, before halves as well, but this year it's definitely a good key race for me to do before Ottawa Marathon at the end of May.
So you are planning to do the Ottawa Marathon, and this is a good tune-up for that event, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very long workout for it.
Let's talk about that distance for a moment, because Around the Bay has been around longer than the Boston Marathon, and it has this extraordinary history. People look forward to it every year, but it is a somewhat unique distance. There aren't a lot of 30K races out there, so how does it differ from other events because of that?
Yeah, I mean, it does require, I think, a lot more strength than a half marathon. especially with the terrain. There's lots of hills. So I think it mimics a marathon more than a half because of that. And a lot of people will use it as a great tune-up for Boston or for a hillier marathon because you get to practice those hills late in the race and really sort of gets you a chance to work with that fatigue in your legs.
Now, one of the tips you provided at irun.ca is to dress accordingly. There can be all kinds of different weather at the end of March in Hamilton, Ontario, can't there?
Yeah. It's crazy because Ontario is just known for having such up and down weather. I grew up in Windsor, and you never know what you're going to get at the end of March. But somehow, it always ends up being cold that weekend. I think I've raced once where it's been mild. And it's funny because there's sometimes days in February where it's like glorious outside. But somehow that weekend is always like on the colder side, and on either side of it, it'll be like so nice. But yes, just be prepared and expect it to be cold. And if it's not cold, then be even happier.
Yeah. And it can also be very windy as well, right?
Yeah, it must be that time of year. I mean, it's the lake effects, but the first 10K is probably when you'll feel the wind most in that long stretch through the industrial area. So for me, that's usually the part where I just remind myself that you just need to really get to that 10K mark where you end up turning, and normally the wind is not as much of a factor.
And you obviously know the course really well. How would you describe it to people who haven't done this race before? You race through Burlington and Hamilton. There are residential parts, industrial parts. As you mentioned, it can get hilly at times. So how would you sum up the course?
Challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also nice that it's segmented in that way. And I think that helps you to sort of mentally chunk it up. There's such different, views along the way. So once you pass like the industrial part, you can sort of look forward to a nice flat area. Then you've got a drawbridge, then the little hill start. And that's where the scenery is actually quite nice, even though it's really hilly. So that's a plus of having to motor through those hills there. So, yeah, I mean, it's not like a straight race on a road where you get bored. There's a lot of wonderful views along the way.
And a lot of kind of classic elements to the course, including the Grim Reaper. You wrote more about the Grim Reaper, I think, than anything else in your list of tips. So tell us about the experience of passing the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, I mean, of course, at that part of the race, you know you're almost done, and it's almost like a gradual downhill into the arena to finish. But he is he's not the nicest person, so take whatever he says with a grain of salt. But I think one year he should actually line up and race with the rest of us.
Yeah, that's a great point. But you're right, he can be I mean, he is the Grim Reaper, right? So he's playing the part.
Yeah.
He's macabre. He's standing next to a cemetery. If there's any inspiration, it's ironic, I think.
That's true.
And then one of the neat things about Around the Bay is that it finishes inside an arena, inside First Ontario Place, and there it's kind of like an Olympic marathon or a major event like that. Most races don't finish that way, so that's certainly an interesting twist at the end of the race, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so cool. It's definitely the only race I've done so far that's finished in an arena like that. And it's really nice for the spectators, too, so they can sort of stay warm and just hang out. And I think they usually have updates during the race about people running, so they keep them up to date and they can stay nice and toasty inside.
Yeah, it is great for spectators. So one of the tips you provided was to smile when you're running this race. Do you smile when you're running a race like this?
Okay, there's definitely no evidence of me smiling during this race ever, but I swear I have had moments of thinking about this and smiling. And I mean, I think it's just one of those things where you almost trick your mind into enjoying what you're doing, and just keep like a lighthearted approach, even if there's multiple challenges that you're facing throughout the day, whether it's like the winds, the hills, just general fatigue. So just trying to race with gratitude and with that lightheartedness can really go a long way.
Yeah, very well said. So how is your running going these days, and what are your goals as the season gets underway with events like this one?
Training's been going really well. I feel strong. This race is, I mean, it's hard to set specific goals because it's so weather dependent, but I just want to have a solid effort and sort of feel like I can work hard in the latter sections of the race, which is a place that I've struggled in the past. And then, yeah, I have a couple other races that I'm going to do. The Saturday after Around the Bay, I'll be in Toronto just racing an 8K. And then I head back to Vancouver, and I might do a couple 10Ks on the road, depending on how I'm feeling, but I'll definitely do BMO half as my last sort of prep to Ottawa.
Okay. And what's the plan for Ottawa race weekend when you do the marathon?
Well, I mean, I'll definitely be gunning for that Olympic standard, which is 2:29:30. And yeah, I mean, that's the main goal.
Yeah. Well, that says it all right there.
I'll try.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, good luck with that. And just one more thing about Around the Bay, the history of this event, what does that mean to you and to other runners, do you think, the fact that this is now a 125-year-old event?
Yeah, it's tough to like comprehend that. That's such a long time. The fact that it's older than Boston, I think, really makes it demand a lot of respect. And a lot of people probably don't realize that it's older than Boston, even though it's sort of like their slogan.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, a lot of people think Boston's the greatest race out there. I've never done it before, so I can't really compare the two, but it definitely has that charm. They've kept the course so similar throughout the years, and I think the challenging course and the challenging conditions that it always presents is what actually makes people sign up year after year.
Yeah,
it's like they're drawn to testing themselves, which is pretty similar to Boston. It's not the fastest course, but it still draws the crowd.
Very well said. And I really enjoyed the tips that you provided at irun.ca. I encourage people to go check them out. Dana, good luck with the race. Good luck as you continue to prepare for the Ottawa Marathon and chase down your goals this year. Thank you very much for joining us on iRun Radio.
Thanks for having me.
That's Dana Pitereski, who will be running again in the Around the Bay 30K this weekend in Hamilton. Coming up on next week's show, two legendary figures, Coach Greg McMillan and John Stanton, founder of The Running Room. I hope you can join us next week on iRun Radio. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.